Support for GLT comes from Bloomington Public Library, now offering a local podcast, Shelf Understanding. Past topics include the tiny house movement, virtual reality, an interview with author Eric Larson, and more. Shelf Understanding is available at bloomingtonlibrary.org, through iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Pollinators need our help to thrive, and you can do your part by creating a pollinator habitat. I'm Laura Kennedy, and this is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert in the field, from the Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum. It is Patrick Murphy. Hi, Murph.
Hi, Laura.
Today on GLT's Grow, calling all pollinators to your yard. So let's get some great plants in the ground that'll bring those pollinators in.
This is beautiful and important all at the same time. Grow does not do any kind of testing or knowledge check at the end of our broadcast, but this is important, so please pay attention.
Okay, let's take some notes. Number
pollinators,
two,
they're like critical. They're essential for life as we know it, basically. Pollinators include bees and butterflies, moths, hummingbird, beetles, wasps, flies, and others, mm-hmm. And the honeybee, inside that whole list of characters, the honeybee is a stressed species, but they're a keystone species, and they benefit all the other living animals, you know. So the bee is pollinating bushes that the grizzly bear and the groundhog and the other, and us, you know. It's pollinating food that's part of everything's mm-hmm. cycle, so that they're very important.
Okay, well, let's get some plants out there for them.
So, you know, pollinator plants a lot of times are designed to attract or used to attract butterflies and hummingbirds because they're so wonderful to watch, but it's the bees that are important.
Right.
And when it comes to annual flowers here in the Midwest, you have a huge list to choose from. So you got everything from low to the ground to the great big tall stuff. Calendula, sweet alyssum, the poppy, sunflowers, zinnia, heliotrope. Bees are just going to go crazy on these. And here's something else that'll help you in your gardening endeavors so you can make your pollinator garden fabulous. Plant them in colonies. Don't mix them up like confetti. Mm-hmm. They don't grow that way typically in the wild. Yeah, there's some mixture on the fringes. But the bees can do more effective foraging when you plant it all in a big smorgasbord-type colony.
Okay.
All right? And that looks better, too. It's the Disney effect, as I've called it before. The flowers look great in mass, and that helps the bees find them and to do their foraging more efficiently.
Okay.
For the perennials, for the permanent parts of your landscape, where you can combine this with woody plants and trees and just totally layer your landscape with pollinator-friendly plants, we've all seen crocus, buttercup, aster, anemone, snowdrops, geranium. We love these in the landscape already. Again, let's plant them out where the pollinators can have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of plants that we can list, like the herbs, if you're a culinary person. Lavender, catmint, sage, fennel, thyme.
Oh, good thyme.
That's right. So they all work, and there's even trees that are friendly to pollinators. Like in the Midwest, we get the tulip tree, Laura, you know, the great big monster tulip tree with the green and orange flowers.
Yes.
Well, not only do they attract pollinators, but they can become part of the architecture in your garden on your property mm-hmm. because the tree can be used in combination with walls of a structure to create an implied wall because the butterflies and the bees and the pollinators, they do best when there's a tranquil air, when the air is still. So a blustery day, it's hard working for them.
Yeah, it's trying to fly against the wind. Nah.
And you can, you know, like if you planted a tulip tree, say 25 feet or further away from your house, it's probably going to always be in the safe zone. And it's the space between the tree and the house, there's a calmness created in that little area.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that, so if you already have some trees at your property, you may already have a great front stage spot for this pollinator garden. But I wanted to take the time to say, yeah, we can talk about all the plant lists. The National Forest Service has one for whatever area you are in. So that's the easy part. You got to create an environment that the pollinators like to visit.
You're listening to GLT's Grow, our weekly gardening show for those who like to get their hands dirty. This week, creating a gorgeous pollinator habitat. So make it, put in the right plants and make a nice, tranquil location for them. And don't use poisons.
That's right. That's funny how, you know, people complain about global warming and then they litter. You know, that always blows my mind. Mm-hmm. Not all people, but some. If you're interested in having a pollinator garden, there should not only be zero pesticides.
Right.
But you should not have oceans of heavy mulch, because you just need a thin layer, because a lot of these pollinators live in the earth.
Oh, really?
In your garden. So they don't like the 4 inches of mulch. They like maybe an inch and a half or two.
That's very important. That's a good distinction there.
And they like a little bit of a mess. So they like some leaves on the ground and stuff like that. And another thing that they hate that'll take you out of the game completely for a lot of pollinator insects is the underlayment.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
Fabric or plastic that's placed under rock or mulch.
Gotcha. So if you're trying to keep out weeds, you might also be keeping out pollinators.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. And, you know, I mentioned using trees and other woody plants in conjunction with your features on your property to create little sheltered areas where you have still air, maybe some shade, and maybe even a spot where you could have a bird bath that was close to the ground, because butterflies puddle. They do this little socializing thing, and they get on the ground, and they oftentimes do it in a spot where there's moisture. Yeah. Who would have thought?
No, I had no idea they needed water, too,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and, you know, so it's hard to tell people to get out there and do a good job gardening, but keep it kind of messy, but that's what you got to do, because a lot of the pollinators, they live where they eat, and you get the best effects from those. For the honeybees, the colors that attract them the most are purple and yellow.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it seems like high school colors or something.
Yeah, yeah, and... For the hummingbirds, mm-hmm. you got the trumpet-shaped flowers, you know, like a foxglove or a petunia.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is red is a good color for the hummingbirds.
Yeah.
But, you know, moths fly around a lot, and I think people might mistake them sometimes for hummingbirds because they can be so large.
Oh, yeah.
But they do a great deal of pollinating, and they do so at night, you know, so they might be attracted to some of those flowers that are lighter in color.
Oh, what about like an evening primrose? Would that help?
I don't know. Laura, honestly, but how could it hurt?
Absolutely.
There's always room for an evening primrose, for heaven's sake.
I'm a big fan, to be quite honest with you.
And it's important to mention, too, that the habitat for our pollinators, and most importantly, the keystone bee, its habitat is shrinking, and it's shrinking from, in part, sprawl.
Yes.
You know, we keep growing up and outward. But also from pesticide abuse.
Yeah.
Not pesticide use in general, because if you do what the manufacturer says, you can stay out of trouble.
Okay.
But it's the abuse of pesticides and the overspraying, over-applications and things like that. Colonizing, like I mentioned, also increases the fragrancing potential for your enjoyment, but that's another way that pollinators are attracted to your garden.
Because it smells good.
It's got to smell good.
Yeah.
I didn't see one piece of information about having the rancorous area, you know. So how do you compost if you have the pollinator garden?
Okay.
Remotely. So you don't want it right there. You know, it's not the same thing. Just because we say have it messy, that doesn't mean you can compost on the ground right there. They're two separate things.
Yeah. What you need is a nice perfumed garden, a nice tranquil area, and no abuse of the poisons, and they should come running.
You should have a good, clean habitat that's great for your enjoyment and also for our pollinators.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much, Murph. Now, next week on GLT's Grow, we're taking a question from Michael in Bloomington, who wants to know about getting rid of spider mites. So we're going to be tackling that next on GLT's Grow next week. If you've got a gardening question that you'd like Murph to take on, go to our website, WGLT.org, fill in the form, and send that along to us. We would love to hear from you. Maybe Murph will answer your question on the air. Send those questions at WGLT.org/grow.